You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. The 2022 Idaho legislature officially ended last week after 3 months in Boise. There was a lot of talk and some shouting about everything from libraries to abortion laws. So we wanted to take a deep dive into what did and did not get done in this year's session. So we asked three reporters who have been watching the action since January to come on the program today. So joining us live are Betsy Russell, the Boise Bureau Chief of the Idaho Press, as well as the voice of the Eye on Boise blog, Margaret Carmel, senior reporter with BoiseDev.com, and our very own James Dawson from Boise State Public Radio News, who covers the legislature every single year for us. Welcome to the program, everyone.
Thanks for
having us.
Happy
Monday.
Well, there is a lot to get to, and so we're going to do our best to dive into this. I mean, we're talking everything, as I mentioned, from criminalizing parents and librarians to trying to make sweeping election changes. A lot happened, but not everything that was debated became law. So I want to start with libraries and librarians. Jimmy and Betsy, you both covered this. Betsy, set us up on this one, and Jimmy, feel free to please chime in.
Sure. So the House passed a bill, House Bill 666, which some thought was appropriately named, that would have criminalized librarians if minors checked out materials that were deemed to be harmful. And there was a lot of talk in the House, particularly from Representative Ron Nate and some of his allies, that our libraries are dens of pornography and librarians are pushing this stuff on kids and we got to stop them and they don't care and they're being defensive. And it was actually pretty horrifying because, of course, if anyone's been to a library, that's kind of not
right.
The interesting thing about that bill is that it passed the House, but it died in the Senate, as did all those things you mentioned in your opening, Gemma. Basically, a lot of really divisive hot button issues came out of the House and didn't end up going anywhere in the Senate. Mm-hmm. And that included, that did not include the abortion law, which is law, our Texas style abortion law, but the librarians bill, bill about trans youth, denying them treatment mm-hmm. and making it a felony for their parents to allow them to have any treatment, including hormones, a huge array of election changes, things like cracking down on voters for switching parties before a primary, House Bill 439, that passed the House, died in the Senate, no hearing. Another really controversial bill about private militias that was proposed as a way to remove some old unused language in the law, but set off really a firestorm of controversy because that same old law is what groups in other states have used to react to things like the Unite the Right rally in Charlotte that killed a woman. And this didn't seem to be perhaps the best time to be sending a message from the state that we want more private militia activity. So that bill passed the House, died in the Senate.
So Jimmy, I want to ask you more about the library bill because I do, even though this didn't pass, I mean, but Jimmy, there still was impact to the library budget, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say that even though it died in the Senate, the bill that would have made it a criminal misdemeanor for librarians to check out harmful materials to kids, it kind of came back from the dead in a way where the House saw, they didn't consider all five of them, but there were five different versions of the Idaho Commission for Libraries budget. It took several attempts to pass that, including the fifth attempt in a late night vote a couple Fridays ago. And that cut $3.5 million in federal funding that would have built out these rooms at rural libraries. So, you know, let's say a resident in Lemhi County or Custer County, these really remote places that don't have a whole lot of people, a lot of federal land, but those residents could go to their local library and get telehealth medical care, not to mention another $307,000 that would have paid for audio and ebooks for K-12 students could have been accessed anywhere in the state, whether you're a public school kid or if you're homeschooled even too, you would have been able to access those materials. Clearly, you know, it was at the top of everybody's mind, especially that Friday when you had multiple budgets get voted down, because of the Senate's inaction on House Bill 666.
Jimmy's right. Well, and this that was quite a significant cut in the Commission for Libraries budget. And notably, the Commission for Libraries doesn't operate libraries. They provide support services to libraries across the state, which are operated locally. And that $3.5 million that was cut for telehealth services, that has nothing to do with pornography or who's checking what out of the library. That was very clear. It was just a move by the House to punish librarians because they didn't like the way they reacted to House Bill 666. And that $3.5 million for telehealth access was one of the top priorities, legislative priorities this year for the Idaho AARP. So there are real world impacts to these political fights that we see.
Right. So we have legislators who are mad at librarians, so they cut the budget, but ultimately the impact is to Idaho citizens who live in rural areas who now cannot get telehealth.
Exactly.
If I'm understanding this right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Another issue that Betsy, you mentioned that I want to talk about is the criminalizing of parents and doctors for giving their children gender-affirming medical care. And yes, this ended up being tabled, but this was a hot-button issue. This got national headlines. And there was some great concern about this passing, Betsy.
Absolutely. It was opposed by the Idaho Medical Association. It was counter to the standards of care for medical treatment. There were parents and kids who came in and testified saying young people will commit suicide if you pass this law. This is what allows them to cope with their situation. This is the standard of care, and you would outlaw it and make it a felony? And the legislature passed it nonetheless on ideological grounds, basically that they think that they think that gender is binary and you're either you're male or you're female and that's how God made you and how dare you mess with it. And really that's not exactly, you know, there's an intersection between politics and policy and medicine. And this was a medical issue. And the medical experts told the legislature one thing, they did not listen. There were a few anti-trans activists from out of state who testified in favor of this bill. It was quite a thing to see. And particularly to see, you know, a young person in tears saying, this is the only thing that allowed me to live. And I considered suicide. And if you pass something like this, people like me will kill ourselves. And they passed it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this was the second attempt at passing this. I mean, it was part of the slate of anti-trans legislation in 2020, which, you know, we saw House Bill 500 with, you know, the quote, Save Women's Sports Act, which was the first of its kind in the country. And we've seen, you know, more than a dozen, at least, other states pass that type of law forbidding transgender girls and women from playing on sports teams that align with their gender identity, not to mention the bill that would have forbid transgender people from changing the sex on their birth certificate, which got challenged in court and immediately thrown out because it violated a previous ruling, federal court ruling.
And the reason why this one came back this year is because freshman representative Bruce Skog thought of a new way to frame the legislative proposal. He is a lawyer, and he decided to amend an existing law that bans genital mutilation of girls that has to do with, you know, ritual mutilation issues that we've heard of in the past and in other countries and cultures. And it is existing law and it's a felony. And so basically he tried to shoehorn this issue into that law in order to address this for both males and females.
Well, and what I found interesting as well is that when we had senators, Betsy, come and talk, finally talk about this, you know, issues like religious freedom came up because we have religious medical exemptions in the state of Idaho, where if you choose not to get your child medical care based on your religious beliefs, you can. And you know, and then when we look at the debate for the last 2 years about vaccines and about masking, it was interesting to me how we did finally have, in particular, Republican legislators who came out and said you can't say all of this and then pass this law that would impact trans youth and also is unconstitutional.
Right. And I think most notable among those was retiring Senator Patty Ann Lodge, who is a longtime senator, the chair of the Senate State Affairs Committee. And I had a really candid interview with her at the end of the session, and she talked about why those bills died in her committee. And she talked very frankly about how she has, in her words, stood up tall over the years for a group called the Followers of Christ in her district, which is a religious group that believes that if they partake of modern medicine, they will go to hell, including if they let their kids receive any modern medicine. And as a result, some of their kids die. And so this led to what we call our faith healing exemption in the law in Idaho, which many people have been working for years to get rid of on the grounds that, in general, parents shouldn't let kids die unnecessarily
there
for
is that.
Lack of treatment for things that are easily treated. But Senator Lodge said they really have a religious exemption. And if you believe that a religious exemption should exempt parents from something like that, then you cannot tell other parents that they can't make other decisions regarding their kids as proposed in this trans youth bill. And I thought those comments from her were very striking.
Yeah, I agree with that. Margaret, I want to bring you into the conversation. Let's take a look at property taxes, because you and your organization, Boise Dev, really kept a big eye on this.
Right. Property taxes remain something that voters continue to talk about. I know these big social issues get big headlines and they get a lot of intense views on either side. But I constantly hear from people and politicians who knock doors that property taxes are the number one issue that people are frustrated about. And there are many reasons why they are going up so much. And this issue has dominated the last several sessions, the last four sessions at least, with little progress on the problem of how to bring relief to property owners who are shouldering a higher and higher burden of taxes as, you know, residential property continues to appreciate in value faster than commercial property. And not much happened on this session. Everyone seemed to take a pause for next year. House Majority Leader Mike Moyle presented a piece of legislation that essentially would have required half of increases to sales tax revenue to go back into property tax relief for cities. He says this would help bring some relief over time, whereas some city leaders that I talked to were saying, no, this would just continue to erode our ability to use our budget to pay for increasing demands of services as Idaho grows. So that bill did not go anywhere. And then later in the session, Senator Jim Rice brought a bill that was also made a big splash that would have replaced nearly all revenue from nearly all property tax revenue on homeowners with a hike in sales tax. And, he really made his case. He and other senators, and as well as Mike Moyle, made their case that this would bring real relief and it would also keep the cities whole by hiking that sales tax. And there was a lot of fierce debate about it. Ultimately, it never even came up for a hearing and a vote because it sounded like some folks were still skeptical and it likely didn't have the votes. And so Rice and Moyle say this is going to come back next year. And that would be a huge shakeup, both on how local property taxes are disseminated, what your bill looks like, how cities are paying their own expenses. It would just completely turn the whole system upside down. And I think a lot of people are still processing and doing the math. Would this relief be enough? Would this relief be worth the potential change to revenue at the cities? And essentially, would cities and counties be able to keep their lights on? And so we're sort of in this holding pattern. And there were some small pieces that were passed, including one fix that essentially would bring more people back onto the circuit breaker, which was part of a bill that was passed last year that essentially said if your house was worth too much money and it didn't matter how low your income was, you could not get state assistance to pay property taxes. Now this new bill passed this year let more people back on that program sort of as a walk back. But other than that, there really wasn't a lot of major progress. And once again, we're going to be looking ahead to 2023 to see what the legislature does with this problem as people's bills continue to climb.
Mm-hmm. I think that...
go ahead, Betsy.
Well, I'm sorry. I'll talk about it after the break.
Okay. Yeah. I want to take a quick break because I want to stay with the taxes theme because I also want to talk about the income tax. So keep that thought, Betsy. We'll come right back to it. Continuing our deep dive into the completed 2022 Idaho legislative session with Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press, Margaret Carmel with BoiseDev.com, and our own James Dawson with Boise State Public Radio News. Betsy, let's get back to your comment property in regards to taxes. Yeah, property taxes.
I think that among the smaller pieces that passed this year with regard to property tax, the most significant was probably House Bill 735, which had to do with the funding for public defense, which currently is... Mm. There's a big burden on the counties for that, and it's intended to move towards state funding of that. And so the step that it's taking is that it would provide $34 million a year in state funds to the counties for the next 2 years, which would result in a 5-6% reduction in county property taxes that are charged for the next 2 years, because it would also require the counties to eliminate their current medical indigency levy. And so now that's property taxes charged by counties. It doesn't affect the taxes charged by cities or other types of taxing districts. And that bill, after those 2 years, anticipates tapping the very thing Margaret was talking about earlier with Representative Moyle's other bill, the future increases in sales tax funds that go out to local governments to help pay for public defense. And this kind of goes back to Representative Moyle's whole philosophy that Idaho's local governments get plenty of money already, and what are they whining about? Why don't they just cut their budgets? And he frequently points to the fact that they get this large share of state sales tax revenues. However, the state government right now is rolling up gigantic budget surpluses that we have never seen the likes of, $1.9 billion this year. And the cities and counties are struggling, as Margaret said, to keep the lights on, to fund fire and police, and to cope with a huge amount of growth. And so it seems like, you know, that might not be the whole answer, to just take away more money that local governments will get in the future and use that to reduce property taxes, because what are they going to use to fund the costs of growth? There was another bill passed this year that I think will affect property taxes in a positive way and bring some relief. And that is the portion of the public school budget that includes a big increase in early literacy funds. There is a $47 million increase in there that the governor requested, and that is enough for school districts across the state to cover optional full-day kindergarten if they choose to do that, or they could use it for other reading programs. Well, there are a whole lot of school districts in the state right now that are covering that through supplemental property tax levies, because the state has only been funding half-day kindergarten, and a lot of districts and a lot of parents and a lot of families want full-day kindergarten. So this, in those districts, will provide real property tax relief. It seems like if the legislature wants to provide property tax relief, they've got to either have the state fund some of those functions that they're asking local governments to fund now from property taxes, since the state has so much money and the local governments don't, or perhaps just re-index the homeowner's exemption and restore it and enlarge the circuit breaker, none of which the legislature has been willing to do.
Well, and Betsy, I think too, it's difficult to stomach some of what is going on in regards to cities and counties and what they are supposed to be doing to try to keep the lights on, when, as you mentioned, we have the largest surplus in history from the state level.
That's right. And this really, I mean, it's not just Representative Moyle. This is a theme that I have seen throughout the Idaho legislature and increasing over the years, that it views the legislature's role, the legislature's power, and the legislative prerogatives, including to tax, as all important, so much more important than anything a local government would do, or any other branch of state government for that matter, be it the executive or the judiciary. Last year, we saw big attacks from the legislative branch on the executive branch with regard to emergency powers. This year, it was against the judiciary.
Jimmy, let's talk income tax. This is the largest income tax cut in our state's history passed.
It is, after last year's historic income tax that broke the record income tax cut. So yeah, we're talking a lot of money, 300 and, oh boy, Betsy, remind me, $350 million, something along those lines.
Well, it's a total of $600 million.
Yes.
And roughly half of it is for one-time rebates and the other half is for ongoing permanent tax rate reductions for individuals and corporations.
Yep, that's correct. So total of, I believe, $1.5 billion over the next 4 years, including this current year, because some of that money is going into this year's budget because of those tax rebates. So, I mean, this was huge. It was the first thing that they did out of the gate right in January. You know, it's what took until the end of January, February 1st or so for it to pass both houses, the House and the Senate, that is. And then it was quickly signed by Governor Brad Little, which he highlighted in his State of the State address. And not to mention that this would also, and not would, but it did also kind of crunch down the tax brackets in Idaho. So now we only have, you know, a handful as compared to, you know, years past when we had several. Now, anyone earning more than $5,000 a year will be taxed at 6%. And that's the top tax bracket in the state of Idaho.
And notably, that's $5,000 in taxable income. That's actually more like $20,000 to $25,000 once you have your deductions and personal exemptions and stuff.
Sure. But still, I mean, that's what, $25,000? That's around minimum wage, roughly just a little bit above full-time minimum wage employees. So basically, everyone is paying the top tax bracket if you're working full-time. And so, yeah, that was the major piece of the tax reform, you know, agenda here in the state legislature, which got some controversy because you had several lawmakers, including some Republicans, saying, hey, you know, we should kind of hold off on this just so we see what other priorities might come about that we want to pay for with this $1.6 billion projected surplus.
Budget surplus. 1.9.
yeah, and 1.9 now. Yeah. It was 1.6 back then.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, it's and we saw it later in the year when people were like, oh, we just don't have the money now that we paid for this gigantic tax break plus a whole lot of other big ticket items that were on the, you know, the Republican leaders' to-do list.
And that really turned out to be the death knell for major property tax relief this year and for grocery tax relief, which is a big priority for a number of legislators, as we heard a whole lot about in the House.
and you know, when we look at this surplus, this $1.9 billion surplus, Margaret, an issue that is impacting so many Idahoans is housing. So once again, big discussions in the during the session with this, but where did we end up?
So for the first time, I think probably ever, the legislature decided to approve, vote for money to build housing that is for workforce Idahoans and a few affordable units. But the key is that this was American Rescue Plan money from the federal government. And you could tell from listening to the debates that the legislators were not pumped about spending this money. There was a lot of debate about the federal debt and burdening our grandchildren and all sorts of things. But ultimately, it squeaked by to spend $50 million from federal relief money that Idaho got as gap financing to build workforce housing through public-private partnerships. And with the majority of those units, those 1,000 units it's expected to build, being constructed in rural areas. And when I say gap financing, the way that works is that whenever you lower rents and you have them lower than the market rate, it's going to put an impact on a developer's ability to make that project pencil or be profitable or just get the loans that they need and work essentially in a capitalistic sense. And so that gap financing comes in where it's needed to fill the gap between what it costs to build the project and what they will get from rents, those lower rents for middle income and low income folks who live in the buildings. And so this $50 million will go towards Idaho, go to the Idaho Housing and Finance Association, and they're gonna review projects and send them out to, you know, developers, localities that are looking to build these sorts of projects. But again, there was not a lot of cheerleading for this. It was very much like, well, if we have the money, and I guess we're in a housing crisis, we might as well do this anyway. And there was objections from more conservative legislators about affordable housing, comparing this to infamous housing projects in Chicago and New York and all of these things. And so it squeaked by. And I think it's going to be interesting to see where these projects are built and what the rents are going to be and what communities can live there. But I would not expect the legislature to use its surplus money in the future next year to fund affordable housing or do another project like this, just given the tenor of the debate that we observed this year.
Mm-hmm. We need to dive into a very controversial bill that was passed into law. This is Idaho's new abortion ban, which is set to go into effect April 22nd. I know Jimmy and Betsy, you both covered this. Jimmy, why don't you set this up for us?
Sure. So this kind of was bubbling under the surface for, I don't know, I would say the first half of session. Multiple versions of it were proposed. Essentially, now that it's signed into law starting April 22nd, abortion providers cannot perform the procedure after about 6 weeks of pregnancy, which is before many women know that they're pregnant. Family members of an aborted fetus after that time would be able to sue the doctor who performed the procedure and get a minimum of $20,000, in those civil cases. So Planned Parenthood, a regional arm of Planned Parenthood anyway, filed suit late last month trying to block the law since it had 30 days from its signage until implementation. That is still ongoing in the Idaho Supreme Court. We're waiting to hear when the date will be for those oral arguments. But as I am writing currently, the state is pushing back on an expedited timeline that the state Supreme Court granted Planned Parenthood. They are saying they don't have enough time to properly defend this law, even though its chief deputy attorney general, Brian Kane, wrote an opinion saying it could or parts of it could or some parts would likely be found unconstitutional. That's going to be a thing that they contend with because that underpins a major part of Planned Parenthood's lawsuit.
And when the governor signed that bill into law, his signing letter, his transmittal letter, was quite remarkable because he wrote in there that he feared that this bill, quote, will in short order be proven both unconstitutional and unwise. And yet he signed it anyway.
Right. And Betsy, that's what I found fascinating as well, is that here the governor signs this into law, saying exactly that. It's unconstitutional, it is unwise, yet he still signs it. How much of that signing, Betsy, is basically political? And what I mean by that is we have a primary election coming up in just a few weeks. And the governor, his own lieutenant governor, is running against him.
This entire issue is political. Idaho already has some of the strictest anti-abortion laws on the books. Plus, we have trigger laws on the books that would make abortion a crime if Roe versus Wade is overturned. And that might even happen in the next year. Mm-hmm. The legislature and politicians, when they're facing a tough primary contest, tend to hit on certain issues that appeal to kind of the far right Republican base. And gun rights and abortion have always been, the most popular ones of those issues. And this is a very real example of this. I think this is very much political. Representative Stephen Harris, who sponsored the bill in the House when he was presenting it, was acknowledging that, actually under current constitutional law, you can't do this. But he called the mechanism of this bill clever, quote, clever, because it doesn't have the state enforce it. It has these private parties who would file lawsuits enforce it. And that's how the Texas law that it's modeled after has not yet been struck down. I think it's worth noting that despite all these incredibly divisive hot button issues that the legislature spent so much of this year's session on, there was another side to that session, this session. And that was really, really big accomplishments, including major right. education and infrastructure investments that are probably going to be felt for generations, from transportation to water and sewer upgrades to broadband access. And it's true, as Margaret pointed out on the affordable housing, some members of the legislature fought every one of those all along the way, but they did pass. And it wasn't just the state budget surplus. It was a combination of the American Rescue Plan funds and another big pot of funds from the federal government for infrastructure and the state surplus. And all those together allowed the state to make all those investments, plus put another $300 million into its rainy day savings fund and basically pay off all the state's bonded indebtedness. So financially, this was a very successful session. On the politics side, it was pretty tense.
It certainly was. I appreciate all of you for coming in and breaking this down for us, going into a deep dive on the legislative session. Thanks to Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press, Margaret Carmel with Boise Devon, our own James Dawson. Up next, if you've got teens who can't sleep, well, guess what? You're not alone. We've got some tips for you. Stick around.